It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dave and Dejanovic.
Dave saw a video out of Russia, and I thought he was going to faint. And we're going to dive into that conversation right now.
That was not an exaggeration. Like I was a little woozy after watching this
video.
You
looked at me, and I'd never seen you look like that.
Really?
It's a blank stare. You got a little wobbly. And I don't blame you. This is horrible.
Yeah. Do I have to describe it?
No, just do your best to describe it, to let our listeners in on it without making everybody faint.
Yeah, without not wanting to eat for the rest of the day. What I had seen is I came across this video, and it was saying that Russians that were being called into the military because Russia president and Vladimir Putin has started to essentially draft, right? And what people were doing to either prevent being called up or not qualify for the draft, they were breaking body parts. They were purposefully breaking arms and legs. And I watched the video. I wasn't sure what I was watching at first, Debbie. And essentially they propped a leg up on a stair. And you saw a person jump onto the leg and you hear it and see it snap. And I about passed out.
I can see why. I mean, now, and you did not show me the video. You did not.
You're welcome, by the way.
Yeah. Anna Pinchakina, who's a USU professor and expert on Russia. Good morning.
Good morning.
I mean, I felt desperation as I saw videos of Russian men fleeing to the borders to get away from the draft or to get away from the call up to fight in Ukraine. They're desperate. It seems as though they're just desperate to get out or to get out of fighting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think desperation is a spot on description here, Debbie. And also you can see the desperation among the mothers and the wives who are protesting in two different regions of Russia, in Dagestan and Yakutia. These are two remote, kind of high, they call them ethnic republics within Russia. And in these two regions, they had the highest per capita death rate in this war with Ukraine. And this is where you see complete outrage by the families in addition to men fleeing the country.
Does that outrage, is it effective at all? Is there anything that they can do, or is their voice being listened to at all?
In all of these authoritarian regimes, it's very difficult, and frankly, it's impossible to predict what will happen next, because they all look very kind of stable until they crumble. And that crumbling is always very sudden and it's very difficult to predict. As of today, I think what we're seeing is that the government will probably ease up on mobilization in those two regions where we have this very high level of protest activity in Dagestan and Yakutia, but will continue mobilizing men in the rest of Russia where we don't see this high level of protest. But it's very difficult to predict, so with those caveats.
Professor, it's just as you were talking about, the regime, and it seems stable until it crumbles, and they crumble quickly when they do crumble. I thought, how ironic. So many had predicted that Ukraine would fall within days of Russia's invasion. Now Ukrainians and their military, they're gaining ground. They're recapturing territory that belonged to them in the first place. And now we're talking about Russia's instability. It's just amazing to watch this unfold.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. In fact, you know, it wasn't just the Russians who miscalculated completely, right? This is one of the greatest strategic mistakes by historical standards on Russia's part. But if you remember back in late February, when Russia just initiated this invasion, even the U.S. intelligence, which had very good information about the timing of Russian attack and the type of Russian invasion, they were still estimating that Kyiv would fall within 96 hours. So in that sense, yes, the entire world completely underestimated Ukraine. And in addition, you know that Russia started this aggression against Ukraine all the way back in 2014. When it annexed Crimea and when it sponsored the war in the Donbas region. And back then, after 2014, I really enjoy showing the maps of voting patterns in Ukraine before 2014 and after. Because what Putin did back then in 2014, he completely consolidated the Ukrainian nation. So it was really that it's on all of us that we overlooked this very important factor of morale and political unison that the nation of Ukraine experienced after Russia's aggression in 2014. And in that sense, Ukraine kind of pulled off on Israel. It's too early to say whether it will be able to militarily defeat Russia, but in terms of the nation surviving and the nation being unified, yes, absolutely.
Anna Pechekina is a USU professor, an expert in this part of the world. Can you give me an idea of what the morale is like? Because it seemed when Vladimir Putin first invaded, it seemed like many of the Russian citizens were buying into his rhetoric. How are they reacting now that Russian soldiers are returning in body bags or not returning at all?
Yes. So the regimes like Putin's Russia are built. So this is an authoritarian regime, not a totalitarian one. There is a big difference between those two. Authoritarian regimes are built on citizen disengagement. And while totalitarian regimes are based on massive mobilization and engagement of citizens in politics, right? So authoritarian and Putin's Russia was trying to implement this war in a similar way that the U.S. implemented the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, where the war is happening, the country is at war, but such a small percentage of the population is directly affected by it that for the rest of society, it's just happening on TV. It's a remote event. It does not concern them. So that was the deal until September 21st, when Putin announced mobilization. So in that sense, the war for Russians started on September 21st, right? Yeah. And in that sense, it only has been happening for an average Russian citizen only for less than a week. So we're yet to see what kind of the general disengagement, kind of the very tacit approval, as long as it does not concern me. What does that look like when the war becomes costly, when it's your family member, when it's your best friend that is being mobilized and killed or severely injured at the front? So,
Anna Pechekina, thank you so much for joining us. Sorry, we ran out of time on that interview, but what great insight, Debbie, that really the Russian people have been able to kind of keep this at arm's length, something they see in news and media reports. But now with the call-up and the draft, it is hitting their towns, their homes.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America. But this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.